Campus FM i presenta Musicisti Zaza Maltin Harsa lin il-ħidma u l-karriera ta' Zaza fil-qasam tal-mużika. Kitba produzzjoni u prezentazzjoni ta' Joyce Gullnajmer.
Nisela nisemija kolla ta' dana l-istazzjon ta' Campus FM u nistidinom għal-programm juħobdina sensila li fija jena idallaqakom ma' mużġisti Maltin, mużġisti li għadhom żgħar, mużġisti oħrajn li tiġa smajna bisimhom ħafna drabi u li huma ta' suċċess ukoll. Dina l-sensila bażikament hija mibnija dwar żgħażagħ li għadhom fil-bidu tal-karriera, però l-mistiden li għandi llum għandu karriera li hija tried and tested għal-ħafna snin. Dejjem tagħti soddisfazzjon lilu u soddisfazzjon lil min ikun qiegħed jisimgħu. Mhuwiex Malti, imma għalkemm jifhem il-Malti u anke jitkellem ftit bil-Malti, allura l-intervista se ssir bl-Ingliż, imma mhux se nista' ngħid xejn kontrih għaliex jifhimni. Jifhimni sew bil-Malti li ngħid.
Kważi kollox imma.
Kważi kollox. Dak kien John McDonough li huwa l-mistieden tiegħi llum bi pjaċir għandi lil John McDonough fil-programm illum li dawk li jsegwu l-dinja orkestrali ta' Malta jafu li huwa l-Principal Oboe fil-orkestra tagħna. U li jismu sawa parti essenzjali mid-dinja mużikali Maltija. First of all, thank you John for accepting to come on the program. The usual questions that we start with, when did you start learning music? What inspired you?
Okay. Well, I started learning the violin when I was about 11 years old. And what inspired me? I think it's very difficult to put your finger on that because I think music is something that comes from a very early age. And maybe it's just going to hear performances or concerts with my mother. I remember going to see the Mikado and being fascinated by the stage and music and concerts in Yorkshire where I'm from.
Where you're from?
There was a wonderful concert hall called the St. George's Hall, and I remember vividly a performance of The Planets, which really inspired me. The Holst, The Planets, with a huge orchestra there, and I was just captivated, wanted to, looking at all the instruments.
And that happened before you started learning music?
Yes.
So the influence that you got from your home did have an effect on you?
Yes, I'm sure about that, yes.
And you recommend it, that parents
definitely
should.
I think it's important that children do integrate and trying to find concerts, or the parents actually bring children to concerts. It doesn't need to be something very heavy. It can be something Peter and the Wolf. It could be something that's a light work. It could be something that's fun, or even musicals. I mean, we have a lot of music on the island. Just so you're actually listening, and if the child is particularly interested, maybe they want to look into the pit. We were just playing Carmen 2 weeks ago, and we saw little children wanting to come and look at the harp and look at the flute, and the parents were showing them the instruments, which was very nice.
Yes. That's a very good beginning for children.
Yes, definitely.
You said you come from Yorkshire, but right, Yorkshire is a whole region.
Yes.
Which part of Yorkshire?
West Yorkshire.
West Yorkshire. Yes. Particularly where from?
It's the town is Bradford.
And
it's got canals and lots of hills. It's famous for the dales. Lots of walking. Lots of rain.
Talking about rain today when you are recording this program.
Yes.
It's been terrible. Yes. Last night has been terrible. We are recording this program on the 25th
yes.
of October, and it was raining very, very hard all night, and it disrupted the traffic, and anyway.
We needed to come on canoes this morning.
So, John, Bradford, the atmosphere in Bradford, did it lead you to music?
I think there were a few points where I think I was interested naturally myself.
And school?
School, I had the option to take instruments. And I was always interested really with the wind instruments. I wanted to play the flute when
I was very
young.
But you chose the violin, you said?
Well, I chose the violin because there weren't any flutes left. And I chose that when I was about 11. And I found it a difficult instrument, which it is. And then I think
the violin, the violin.
Yes. And then when I was 13, for my 13th birthday, I remember I got a clarinet. I think I'd heard Akabilk or some jazz, and I wanted to play the clarinet. And so my mother got a second-hand instrument for me, and we started playing the clarinet as well, which, to be honest, was a bit easier to play.
Than the violin.
Yes, than the violin, yes. The wind instruments, I think, are a little bit easier. just because of the nature of them, just to cover the holes rather than trying to bow and find a decent sound. I'm sure a lot
and
of
the interpretation. Yes,
exactly. Well, that comes much later, Joyce. But the actual basics of trying to make a tone on the violin is quite difficult.
So you find it more difficult than playing the wind instruments.
Yes, yes.
The
wind strings instruments. Are difficult instruments.
And how did you go on to? How did you move on to the oboe then?
Well,
you had the violin, you had the clarinet,
yes. And a bit of piano, but that was came much later. When I joined, I actually auditioned for college on the clarinet, and I went to London College of Music. That was in 1990, I think. Yes. And we used to always have a lack of double reed players. So there was no oboes, no bassoons, or very few players. And I was just fascinated.
In Bradford?
No, this was in London, the London College. Because in those days, even the colleges were also suffering from a deficit of certain wind instruments and double basses.
Even in Great Britain?
Yes, definitely. So always the double reeds suffer, the bassoon, the oboe.
And we're talking about which
this
reed?
Was
90s. The 90s.
And double bass. If you think about it, not the most obvious choice. And the expense of the instruments makes them difficult instruments to learn. So we had extra players coming in to perform. And I was just captivated by this amazing instrument, which had a bittersweet sound and... You'd listen to it just playing long notes and hovering above the piano in the Mozart piano concerto or something. And it was, for me, it was like an angel. And I got so captivated that I thought the clarinet became a boring instrument for me.
And you moved on to the oboe.
Onto the oboe.
Since
I started,
then, you've never looked back.
Well, I used to play in shows, so I did them simultaneously for a while. In London, I remember doing Anything Goes by Cole Porter. And each of the players had to play four instruments. We were four wind players, and we all played four. And I was on what they call reed three, which was oboe and cor anglais, tenor saxophone and clarinet. And you're there shifting between instruments and trying to turn pages and keep your reeds all wet. It's quite funny.
So, but you did manage.
Oh, yes. And there's a lot of work in the West End shows. They're not going to... If the oboe only has one small part in a show, they won't make the... Pay one oboe player to come in and play one 10-minute solo. They'll pay one player to pay four instruments.
We'll talk about the oboe as an instrument later on in the programme. But what made you come to Malta then?
Malta?
You were already playing in London.
Yes.
And
well, this was freelance, remember, Joyce. And it was a difficult time. I mean, I just left college, teaching a lot, lots of freelance teaching.
You were about 19, 20?
I was then 21, 22. Mm-hmm. I remember taking a bus and tubes and going to Potter's Bar, a school at the end of the Piccadilly line, and teaching for a whole hour clarinets and flutes and saxophones. In fact, Mike Gatting's son I taught, who was the English cricket captain's son. I taught him the saxophone for a term. So, yeah.
So you had decided that your life was going to be concentrated around music.
Yes, definitely music. But I wasn't sure if I was going to be just teaching or playing.
Or performing.
Because it's difficult to break into the performing side of the career.
If I were to ask you, do you remember who your first teacher was? Would you remember?
I remember my first oboe teacher, who was one. She's still playing. She's used to be principal cor anglais of the Royal Opera House. She's called Elizabeth Fife. And my first violin teacher was a lovely Mrs. Wells, who was Welsh.
In Bradford.
That's in Bradford, yes.
In Bradford.
Yes.
Used to remember her.
I remember her. She was very fond. She used to take me to the music centre every Saturday morning.
Uh-huh.
And, yes. Lovely woman.
Good, good. Yes. So you had your mother and your teacher.
Yes. Yes.
You were their pet, their favourite.
I hope. Maybe. So, no, it was an inspiring time because I think when they show an interest in you, I think and it's the same what I do with my students now. I try and show an interest in my students and their whole life. And I think you have to not just teach music, you have to be so enthusiastic about it that it gets through to the other person. And they come to lessons inspired and wanting to study.
But then you prefer to become a performer.
Well, that sort of happened in that I'd always wanted to be a performer.
Perform.
Yes, but I was thinking, I've got to be realistic. Maybe I won't make it. So I went into...
Was the competition too
big? It's very, very difficult. And it's even more difficult now, to be honest. It's very,
now,
very difficult.
Now in Great
yes.
Britain, you mean?
Everywhere.
Even in Malta now?
Malta,
no.
Not so much, especially for the oboe. But it could become at some time in the future. I think musicians are very fortunate in that we have a full-time career here. If you look at the performing arts, dance, and you look at theatre, I was talking earlier to Mario Mikolev, and he told me that, you know, as most people do here, it's a hobby for them.
Mm-hmm.
Acting is a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get paid for this.
You do it on an amateur basis.
Exactly.
Not because you are an amateur.
But because there is no work.
It's not recognized
as a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very difficult to do. I've got a lot of respect for these people.
But you are lucky.
I'm very lucky to have a full-time job.
And you are British.
I'm British.
You found a job in Malta, a full-time job in Malta.
Well, my connection, this is how it happened, was
that's
through...
That's it. How did it happen?
Okay, so I just finished my postgraduate diploma exam, and on the panel was David Campbell, who's quite...
The clarinet player.
Yes, who's quite popular in Malta. I mean, he's made a knight of Malta, hasn't he? And he said, please come and speak to me after. And we'd recorded the recital. He said, let's go and have a drink in the pub, where lots of good deals are done, you see. And it was summertime, I remember. And he said to me, I just had a call this morning from Charles Camilleri. He said, they're looking for an oboe player in Malta. Are you interested to go? And I said, yes, of course. I said, I'll speak to my teacher and see what she says. But I said, yes, I would. I very much like to go. And
what year was that?
That was 94, actually. And it wasn't until 95 that things got sorted out because there was a problem with contracts and unions and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the job was still open. And I got approached, funny enough, through another person, not through David the second time, but through another oboe player who'd been offered to go. And he said the salary wasn't enough for him and he didn't want to move house. He was a lot older than me. And I said, I'm still interested to go. I said, if you go organise the contract, I'll be part of the Mammal Theatre Orchestra, as it was then. This was 1995, and so I arrived 1st of September.
Was it a sort of an adventure for you?
Definitely.
You are still very young.
I mean, I liked the Mediterranean. I love the hot countries. I'd been, you know, been to sunny places.
Coming
I'd been
to Greece. Coming to work and live in Malta.
And I
was
just
tentative
thought,
enough for
yes,
you.
I thought, well, if I get a full-time contract, why not?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and you've been here ever since.
I've been here... Hamistashi Senna, Falissa.
Hamistashi Senna. And that's John Thorke speaking in Maltese, because I said he understands it and he can even speak Maltese. But after 50 years, you are bound to learn it.
Uh-huh. Not learn it. It's a very difficult language. But it's...
More difficult than playing the oboe?
That's a difficult question, Joyce. The oboe itself isn't difficult. It's difficult only because of its temperamental reeds.
Do you have to be temperamental to play the oboe?
I think you have to have some kind of personality. I think it's a challenging instrument.
Does the instrument speak because of the player? Or does the player play the instrument?
The player has to play the instrument. The instrument's not an instrument that you pick up and you just blow. People have this myth that you just pick up a wind instrument and you just blow air down it and it happens. It doesn't. There's a wonderful French oboe player, Maurice Borg. He's very, very famous. And I've got a DVD of him performing and talking about the oboe. And he says, you tell the oboe, play loud, it says, no. He said, tell the oboe, play quiet, it says, no. You tell the oboe, play legato, it says, no. And everything is a challenge. The nature of the instrument means you have to really work hard to overcome these things.
Mm-hmm.
You have to
We'll talk about the oboe. After listening to you playing it,
yes.
Because now it's time for us to listen to the first excerpt of music that you have played for, that you have brought for us on a CD. And what are you going to play for us, John?
Well, this was the Francesco Azzopardi, the Maltese composer.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Maltese music.
This is Maltese music, and it was recorded
classical music.
Yes, with Ngozo, and it's was the archive from the Imdino archive.
Mm-hmm. And you are going to play the Symphonie en Re.
That's right.
Con Oboe obbligato. So now we'll hear, we'll listen to our guest tonight or to this, today. I don't know whether the program will go on air in the morning or in the evenings. Once it goes out in the evenings, then the repeat is in the morning. So the time is not important. What is important is that John McDonough will play for us this music by Francesco Azzopardi, which many people still do not know its worth. Because it's really beautiful
music. I think
it's
fantastic, yes.
Let's hear it.
Yeah.
That's you playing.
That's right,
your instrument. Now, let's talk about the oboe, which is the love of your life.
The love and hate, let's call it.
The love and hate. Yes. If you love it, you hate it.
Yes, I think so.
And if you hate it, you love it. Otherwise, you'd be not interested enough in it.
Yes, that's right, Joyce.
But you are very much interested in it.
Of course.
So, let's talk about the oboe. Is it a very difficult instrument to play?
It's difficult for reeds.
You've already said that.
Yes. The reeds make it a very difficult instrument to play because I think one reed lasts around about 1 or 2 weeks only. And each time you're changing, you have to change your whole setup with your mouth, and you've got to get used to the reed.
You have to get used to the reed.
And you've also got to make them.
Mm-hmm.
So you spend a lot of your time actually scraping bits of wood and hoping that...
But you buy them.
No, I make them.
You make them yourself.
You have to make them yourself. Most professional players do.
You don't buy them and then you adjust them to your
At a beginner level, you can do that. But when you get to professional level, you're going to find no reed is going to really suit you.
And is it a reed? Is it a proper reed?
It is cane that grows in Malta, even.
Mm-hmm.
It's Arundodonax, it's called. It's the ones that grow in the valleys. You see the long, long bamboo shoots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's processed. Maybe it's dried, over a summer.
Mm-hmm.
But like all good things, like good wine... It has to take a long time to mature.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the cane-growing places...
But when you buy it matured.
I buy it as a tube.
As a tube,
cane, yes.
As a tube.
And this is... It's interesting because, it grows in the south of France, like good wines are made there. And you might have to let it mature for up to 10 years before it will be really...
And is it an art in itself?
It is definitely an art, yes.
It is an art in itself.
And a lot of experimentation to try and find out what works for you. Remembering that all your... everyone's mouth is different. Everyone's set of teeth and embouchure is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
This is why it's crucial that you find something that works really for you. And you might find one very, very good reed, but it lasts 2 weeks, and then you have to go through the whole process all again and trying
to
find something that works.
Again.
Yes.
Yes.
Find something that works again.
And then you know that it will only last for about two weeks. And do you use it regularly during those 2 weeks or just once in a while?
No, I'll be using... I've always got to have reeds for the rehearsals I'm doing with the orchestra, with performances. So I generally, even though it takes time to do...
So you get a lot of mileage out of that.
No, you don't, no. You've got to... You get quick at making reeds.
Mm-hmm.
You have to try and be fast. Or else you're going to spend too much time trying to make a sound. And you don't want something that's too hard because you're going to be blowing and nothing's coming out, or it's not going to do all the things.
Has it ever happened to you?
I think once or twice, but not in a performance, no.
Not in a performance.
No. You try and find things that are going to be tried and tested.
You go really well prepared for
a
performance.
You have to, yes.
And the wood section is very important in an orchestra.
Yes, of course.
And even composers who wrote music hundreds of years ago still based their music on strings.
That's right.
The oboe has been played for a very long time.
Yes, it was the predecessor with the crumb horns and early instruments like those and shawms. And then in the kind of Baroque era.
In some languages, it's still called a shawm.
Is it right?
Yes.
Okay. You're telling me something new. Thank you, James. So, yes, and so it's became very famous in the Baroque time. J.S. Bach especially used lots of oboe. In fact, that's the next bit we're going to hear. He used oboes in pairs or oboe d'amore, which was the oboe of love, which is a little bit lower pitched, which are a bit obsolete now. They don't really use them.
Because they had families.
Well, the oboe family was really developed in that time.
Uh-huh.
Oboe da caccia, which were even played hunting, like hunting horns.
Uh-huh.
And they were actually made out of horn. And
out of horn?
They were made out of horn, yes. Yes.
They must have a very particular sound.
And turn, and with usually with a flared bell, brass bell. And they were not keyed like we have now. They had to have huge stretches on the hands. And there's a kind of a myth about where the coronglé came from, the other part of the other member of the oboe family.
Of the oboe family.
Because it's not actually a horn, and it's not English.
it's French.
It's not French even.
It's coronglé.
No. Coronglé is English horn.
Coronglé is English horn,
yes.
Not French.
But it's angled horn. It's a mistranslation.
Oh, so it's not
angled anglais. Horn, and it's not a horn, but it's all. It was a kind of it was a precursor of the oboe da caccia
family.
Which was the one that was played on horseback.
But was it always a part of the oboe family, or was it a precursor to the oboe family as
well? No, it was always part of the oboe family. But it sort of developed out of the oboe da caccia, which is obsolete now. Mm-hmm. That was the hunting one. Mm-hmm. And because that was angled and it was a horn kind of thing, then the oboe, the cor anglais came. The angled, not English horn.
But it's a bad translation.
Yes, it's a misnomer. It's,
and you play the cor anglais as well?
I play the cor anglais as well, yes.
Which one do you prefer?
Well,
the cor anglais
is
a transposition instrument.
That's right, yes. That means you play one note and another note comes out.
You've got to have it fixed in your mind?
No, the parts are always written out for you. They're done for you, so you don't have to worry about that, really.
What about intonation? Is it very difficult to get intonation?
No, I think it's the same, really. Oh, with the oboe, yes.
On the oboe and on the cor anglais.
You have to pitch the notes, yes. You have to have an idea where the notes is, or else it'll be flat or sharp. Mm-hmm. A lot, again, depends on the reed. So if you haven't got a reed that's working very well, you'll find you've got a whole series of problems. Intonation, notes not speaking, lots of hazards of playing. So,
I think that playing a wood instrument is very difficult because, as we said already, a lot of much of the work depends on the wood section.
Yes.
No?
Yes. The orchestra. Yes.
The orchestra.
Yes, it
of
does.
Course.
Yes. Yes, it's built like having the colours on a painting.
Mm-hmm.
The strings
you provide
are
the colours.
The strings are the wash.
Mm-hmm.
We're the colours. And I guess the brass are kind of, I don't know, the extra depth maybe.
Or the wind that blows the colours away.
Yes.
No, I'm only joking. But you have become used to playing the oboe, and for you it's part of your life.
Yes, it's a big part of my life.
You can't do
otherwise.
Teaching
and playing and...
You teach as well.
Yes, I'm teaching, yes.
You teach in Malta, of course.
Yes, I'm teaching at the School of Music now. I used to do part-time lessons and privately, but with the commitments of the orchestra it became very difficult to find time to do both. And the School of Music has lessons starting at 3, so mm-hmm. it's quite ideal. It fits in between, really.
Now you've moved to Floriana. That's not much difficult.
The orchestra premises, that's right. Yes, it's fine. It's the same.
And then you move over to where? To St. Elmo?
Because it's St. Elmo now, yes.
St. Elmo,
yes,
because now the School of Music has moved
from
Old Bakery to St. Elmo.
Yes.
So
it's very handy for the conference centre when we do rehearsals at the conference centre.
Yes, of course.
It's very useful.
So. How about, how do you feel before you embark on a concert, even if you are not going to play solo?
I'm difficult. I'm a very difficult character.
How
on the
are
day.
You before the concert starts?
Difficult.
And how are you after the concert?
I'm a very difficult person on the day of a concert. People don't want to be around me.
No?
Because I get a bit nervous about the concerts, about reads, about what's coming up. I have to have time to prepare. I won't do a load of things and then go to a concert. I'll relax a bit in the afternoon. I'll have to sleep a little bit. I'll have to plan everything in the right order, what time I eat, what time I dress with concert clothes, what time I'm going to arrive. And then I'll have to do half an hour warming up and get myself in the kind of mood for it.
And how do you feel after the concert is over?
Much
elated?
More relaxed. Much more relaxed.
Elated?
Yes, I had gone out for a drink then.
Many times do you feel elated?
Oh, often. All the time, yes.
Are you happy with your career so far?
I'm very happy, yes. I really can't complain. I've done a lot of things, played a lot of instruments. I've done arrangements.
We'll talk about those later on.
Yes.
But it's time for us to listen to another. Yes. Because you also play in small groups and ensembles.
That's right,
no?
Yes, yes.
We should talk about that.
Yes.
We'll talk about
chamber music's different from, obviously, it's much more intimate than playing with an orchestra.
Which one do you prefer?
Oh, that's very difficult. I get satisfaction from both, let's put it that way. And it's in a different way.
But that's a very... doesn't leave...
Okay,
doesn't
the ensemble I enjoy more, but I think if I had the choice and it could pay for a living, I would probably go full-time into the ensemble playing.
Ensemble playing.
Yes, because you don't have a conductor to dictate to you how you're going to do it. You work together as a team. And that's quite satisfying.
And the number is much smaller usually, so you can reach agreement.
We're fine with the quintet.
Uh-huh,
so,
You have your own quintet.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And you have a very good quintet which played even at the Birmiftur Festival.
Yes, it's the Cosmos Wind Ensemble, and we played Birmiftur.
We're going to listen to that now.
Yes,
we'll hear that later.
Yes, yes.
What are we going to hear now?
Bach, J.S. Bach. And this is it's one of the arias that we did at a concert in 2002, which was Yes, Robert was playing on this concert as well. It was his brainchild. And this is 40 years German multi-circle celebration.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this was with Claire Masser, who is very famous in Malta as a singer as well.
Mm-hmm.
and with my former colleague Alice Pullen, who's now in the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra, second oboe. And so
for
I'm playing.
Where she was in Malta?
She played second next to me for 1 year. Mm-hmm. So I'm playing first oboe on this one, and she's playing second. But the oboes are so integrated; they're echoing and answering each other that you never. I think we blend very well. You cannot tell who is who.
Okay, let's hear it. That was you,
yes.
Alice.
Alice Pullen, Natasha Kirkop on harpsichord, and Claire Massa.
Claire Massa, who is, yes. was the soloist,
the
singer.
Soloist, yes, mezzo-soprano.
The oboe, is it very... We've already said that the oboe is part of your life. You can't live without your life, and that you feel very nervous before the concert, but you feel much better
elated afterwards, yes.
You feel much better,
yes.
afterwards.
Especially with a nice drink
Would
of cheese.
Would you recommend it to any young children?
Well,
and have you ever taught somebody who is very good, who would be?
I've had both
your
of experiences.
Followers.
Yes, Ian. Talking about Ian before
Ian
Borge.
Yes, we
he started when he was six. No, about 8 years old with me, and he went through the whole process of School of Music. He did his diploma.
He stopped playing, unfortunately.
Yes, it's his choice. I spoke to him recently. We actually had a nice drink together, and he's gone into accountancy, and he's working in a full-time job, and he's happy. I told him, don't
but
sell your instrument.
He's given up music.
He's given up music for now.
But you had
I think
students.
I think he's settling. I think when he settles
when
into
he
a job,
he'll be back to
he'll
it.
He'll be back to it maybe one day. Uh-huh. One day.
But you had other students.
I've had,
and you still have other
yes,
students.
I've got a very promising one, Keith Sacco from mm-hmm. Zurich. He's doing very well. He's 19 or 20 at university doing medicine. And I've got an adult student, well, he's finished now, Alfred Fenwick, who mm-hmm. was making reeds, and he's done many performances. St.
And
Catherine.
You teach them to make reeds too?
As well, yes, yes.
Was it your teacher who taught you how to make your own reeds?
Yes, that's right. It's
that's
a kind
part
of process.
Of your training.
Yes, you have to
part
have,
of your training.
You're taught by your teacher to do this and mm-hmm. to set up. I wouldn't recommend a person begin the oboe before 11 or 12 years old, just because you need to have the hands that are big enough to cover the keys. You need to have lungs that are formed enough that you can actually blow, because it's it the air has to go under high pressure.
The air has to go
through the reed at high pressure. So it's holding your breath in.
So you're blowing all the time.
Yes, and it's the pressure you need to develop.
So how do you manage to keep those long notes, which are very typical of the oboe?
You have to develop good lungs.
You have to develop pressure. Good lungs. Can and you other, smoke?
There are smokers. I don't.
But there are smokers.
There are smokers who play, yes.
Yeah. I suggest you don't.
I don't want to. No. And then also you need to wait till the teeth are formed, really in a strong way, because you're actually pulling the lips across the teeth to form the embouchure, which is what you need to do to play the instrument as well. So these three things are the things that you need. We recommend we don't start them before about 11 or 12 years old, really.
And there might be problems, physical problems, that will keep you away from studying the oboe, probably.
Usually if you're young, or if you get nosebleeds, or if you've got asthma, perhaps.
But if his fingers are never long enough?
Yes, that's unusual. I never found that. You can get a small reach oboe. I've got one little student now.
Of course, that's very important for the piano too, but it never stops anybody playing the piano.
I've got a young student who's at the School of Music, and he started at 9 years/10, and I mean, he was big enough to do it, and he was coming to me every year since 6 years old. I want to play the oboe, and he's doing very well.
Oh, good.
So that's nice. So,
so you are training your successors.
Yes, maybe.
Good.
I hope so.
And you also arrange music.
That's right. Yes.
That is another affection of your life. That is another
something
thing that
I was fascinated
with. And in fact, you're even publishing music abroad.
Well, I was very lucky to actually find somebody who wanted to publish music. And it's a very difficult, again, like performing, very difficult thing to get into, to get your
to
own
break
works
into.
Published. Yes. I was very lucky that the horn player in my quintet in London, she then went on to work for a publishing house, which is Kramer Music. And they do lots of arrangements and CDs and an ensemble series of classics for all different instruments. And she took him some manuscripts that I had, which we'd played as part of the quintet. And he was very interested. And so she typeset them on the computer. And I have two published, one which is the Serenade for 13 Winds, condensed to 5 players.
How is it doing?
I think it's doing quite well. I mean, I get royalty checks twice a year for a grand sum of 40 sterling, so I can't retire on them.
Is it a very difficult business to break into?
Yes, I think it is. Yes.
There must be many.
Well, now, especially with internet, because people can take music on the internet.
They can just download it. Yes.
So I think publishing is a very difficult thing to break
in. But also there must be great numbers of them too.
Yes, I think so as well, people who want to do it. I was just lucky that these pieces are selling. They're in the catalogue of June Emerson, which is a wind supplying music firm. So those were two were done when... They were both the Capriole Suite, the second one.
The Capriole Suite is the second one.
Yes, were both done when I was at music college. The Mozart, interestingly enough, was formed because another quintet asked me if I could... arranged the famous adagio from the Serenade.
And it was a British quintet.
Because the bride wanted to walk down the aisle to it. So that's how it started. It started life like that. And then I did the other four movements around it, finding Mozart had actually himself written a string quintet version of four movements.
Yes.
So I just used the two scores to try and come out with a good version. The Capriole Suite is a version.
It's very difficult.
It is.
It's very different.
But that was interesting in orchestration and getting the best out of the instruments, using the different voicing, using the bassoon in the high register, using low horns, high oboe, low flutes, just to try and get different textures as well. Because a quintet can't do the same thing as a whole 13 players can do as well. So.
Of course not. Although you can cover most of it. No?
You can, yes.
You can cover most of it.
You can get all the harmony, you can get all the melodies there. But to try and get the real feel of the work.
And the Capriole Suite takes you back to old England.
It takes you... Oh, it's actually a collection of French dances by Arbaud. And they were, I think, 15th or 16th century dances written by which were then orchestrated into a string orchestra suite by a composer called Peter Warlock, he's got his pseudonym. He's actually called Philip Heseltine. And he wrote a lot of English drinking songs. And I think he was a drunk himself in the end, and died of alcoholism, if I'm not mistaken. And he found these old dances, and Capriole was a figure, a little caricature, who was predominant through the whole suite. And he was in all the different medieval dances, as they are, And he created this suite called the Capriole Suite.
And now you've turned it into your own work.
Into a wind quintet, yes.
To a wind quintet.
Yes.
Have you ever played it in Malta?
I played it in Malta, I have. And it's been recorded recently in Naxos by a Canadian group.
Good.
Actually, on this one, I've got an arrangement, optional cor anglais parts, which...
Do you play it too?
I play the cor anglais as well.
Yes, I know you do.
Yes, and I love it. It's a beautiful... And I have played it in this version because it's got a wonderful, deep, resonant voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much like the alto.
We
said
earlier that the cor anglais is a transposition instrument.
That's right,
what does that mean exactly?
Well, that means if you see a note, for example, do, mm-hmm. you see the do, it doesn't come out at that pitch. It comes out 1/5, that's whole 5 tones lower on a fa. So you, instead of playing, so you're actually playing one note, but then another note is coming out.
Mm.
It's a bit confusing for you to understand, but it's...
Does it depend on the quality of the instrument? Does it make a difference?
Well, the instrument is longer. It's not the quality of the instrument. It's more it's the size of the instrument.
No, it's the wood, I mean.
No, at all. No, it's the size of the instrument. The fingering's identical, which means an oboe player can play the cor anglais, but what happens is it comes out like a deeper voice. It comes out in a deeper pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So you can play both instruments and pick up the part rather than have to learn a new set of fingerings.
And the reed is different?
The reeds are different. But I think it's a little bit... The reeds last longer.
And then the two weeks that it lasts for the
oboe. Well, 2 or 3 weeks, yes. The cor anglais has longer solos, usually. You'll find William Tell, you'll find Shostakovich 8, Swanov Tuonela, big, long solos. The oboe has little short solos, usually, but lots of them. And the cor anglais is a very lonely instrument to play on these long solos sometimes. And I've got a recording of the Swan, which I'll play for you.
Is it the next music that we're going to hear?
I hope so. The Swan, yes.
The Swan, which is part of
the Carnival of the Animals. And this is an arrangement for piano and cor anglais.
Good. Let's hear it.
That was me playing the cor anglais, yes.
The cor anglais this time, not the oboe.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Do you like this music?
I think it's very relaxing.
How did it come about?
Well,
And who was playing?
Well,
I was playing the cor anglais,
and a good friend of mine, Max Spears, who was actually an oboist,
mm-hmm.
In the Birmingham Royal Ballet, he was playing the piano and accompanying me. This was for an audition CD when I mm-hmm. might have gone down to San Paolo and played there.
Where?
In San Paolo, in Brazil.
Brazil? Were you going to play in Brazil?
I was thinking of leaving.
Of leaving Malta to go to Brazil?
Yes.
But you said you will never leave Malta.
I never said I'll never leave Malta.
I thought you loved it so much.
Now I love it. I love it very much, actually.
You live in Asha,
yes.
No?
Yes, I do, yes.
How do you get on with the Asha?
I love my neighbours. They're fantastic. Yes, they look after me. They're very protective of me. It's fantastic.
They take care of you?
Oh, definitely. Because at the times I've come back with my shopping bags and opened the front door, pulled my door through, and then left my keys dangling outside. And they come and knock on my door, they post them through to me.
Sometimes I even leave it there during the night.
Yes, I do too.
They forget all about it.
They're so sweet, my neighbours. They're lovely.
And you're happy in Malta?
I am happy in Malta, yes.
You're happy with the orchestra?
I'm happy with the orchestra. I'm happy, very happy with my chamber group.
We'll talk about your chamber group in a minute. Yes. But what was I going to ask you? You made me forget. Let's talk about the Cosmos Wind Ensemble, which is your group.
That's right, yes.
It's made up of Rebecca Hall, flute, you playing the oboe, of course, Gottfried Mifsud playing clarinet, Ulrike Bullmann, the bassoon, the fagot, we call it in Maltese, and Jose Garcia Gutierrez, who plays the horn. Very good musicians.
And have you noticed one particular point of all five of us? We're all from different nationalities.
Yes, you are. Yes, yes.
And we have got our wonderful Maltese contingent in Godfrey.
Godfrey is Maltese.
Yes, yes.
Jose is married to a Maltese woman.
That's right,
a Maltese lady.
Well, he's Spanish,
Becca
of course.
Becca is married to a Maltese man.
Exactly. Yeah.
You live in Asha.
I live in Asha.
So the Malta connection is very
Malta connection,
big.
But also... And also
and Ulrika. Ulrika, yes.
He's a partner of Walter Mikalev.
Yes. Walter,
yes.
No?
Yes,
Mikalev.
Right,
Walter Mikalev. So. I think it's Mikalev.
Mikalev, definitely.
Yes, Walter Mikalev. Yes. Now, I remember what I was going to ask you. You've had your lessons. You've been taught to play music in England.
That's right.
Now you are teaching in Malta.
That's right, yes.
Is it very different or is...
I mean, the teaching is teaching. I mean, I teach in my way, the way I know. What
would you do the same job if you were in any other part of the world?
Yes, I would. I was teaching in schools in England. And I do exactly the same thing as I would do there. I think it's just nice. Maybe I've got more background. I've studied in a conservatoire for 5 years.
What about the lack of a conservatoire here in Malta?
Well, I'm starting students at the beginning, which is very nice, especially if they continue. And then I've seen students studying for 12 years or more. Alfred Fenwick, for example, he's come through. And my good friend Max Spears, who I just mentioned, he told me when he heard him playing, he said, well, he... could easily get into conservatory in England. He said he was almost... he sounded like a graduate, he said for him.
There is no doubt that the talent of Malta
exists. No, there's lots of talent.
There's lots of talent.
There's lots of music making of different levels,
mm-hmm.
but there's so much talent here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had 800 applicants for the School of Music this year. 800, that's a lot of people.
And what about your wind ensemble, the Cosmos Wind Ensemble?
Yes, we've got...
How did it start?
That started, I think, when Ulrika came, really, because we found a bassoonist that wanted to really work, and she pushed for doing some chamber music. She'd been used to doing chamber music in Berlin, so she said, please, can we do some work together? And we started with some trios, with Godfrey, myself, and then we found Pepe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he came later, because there was a wonderful horn player also in the orchestra called Iris.
So you call him Pepe?
We call him Pepe,
yes.
There was Iris Cremona, who was married to Lino from Germany, and she worked with us for a while as well. And then Pepe came, but often we have to do concerts as trios because either people can't afford us or because Pepe is working in Spain, obviously.
Because he works in Spain.
Yes. And then, for example, we have our next quintet concert is on the 28th. It's not quintet, sorry, the trio concert on the 28th of November at the Museum of Fine Arts. And that is Sunday morning and with Kenneth Vittabona, and we're doing an art-related concert. Playing some Mozart, some Beethoven.
Do you find that the interest in chamber music is growing in Malta?
Yes, I think so. I think so. I think.
And is the music scene changing?
Yes, I think there's a lot of things going on. I don't know how well things are publicised to stop competing with each other.
Mm.
That's the problem I feel. There are lots of events going on. I mean, St. Catherine's often put on chamber music concerts. St. James. There's also starting a chamber music every fortnight at the Anglican Cathedral at St. Paul's.
Uh-huh.
And Wayne Marshall, the wonderful organist, gave a recital there in October. Yes. I'll be playing as part of a bassoon quartet. I play the bassoon as an amateur. So I'm playing a bassoon quartet on the 16th of November.
Oh.
Yes, with Ulrika and Archie and Mario from the orchestra. and myself playing fourth bassoon.
Breaking new ground?
Well, I think we've played together some bassoon quartets, but I play it a bit.
You play it a bit.
If you want to come along and
It's
1 o'clock.
Of course I will come.
Yes.
It's
1 o'clock on Tuesday.
1 o'clock on
Tuesday.
Tuesday
16. Yeah.
The problem is that there are too many things going on at the same
obviously.
Time, as you have said.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Many lunchtime concerts, many recitals in the evening. You can't see everything. It's very, very difficult to see everything.
And there is no actual planning, I think, because things... Yeah. Or else there's not enough time.
Yes, there's not enough time.
There's not enough time.
And I think, it's like in London. If you find there's concerts and symphonic concerts and chamber concerts and every concert you can imagine, every single night, every single day of every year... But you can't, when
you can't attend them all.
No, and when you have that variety,
choose,
you don't bother going to them.
Mm-hmm.
You maybe go to one
of
or
course.
Two. I've just come back from Milan, and I saw two Mahler symphonies. I heard the Resurrection,
uh-huh.
and I heard Mahler Sixth. And there was Donata Mattei, who was here for many years.
Yes,
in
Donata
Malta.
Mattei was.
She was playing.
She plays the harp there
in the Verdi Orchestra. Uh-huh. And I was staying with her, and we went to see the Second Symphony. It was. Wonderful, you know, but again, it's the opposite extreme from chamber.
Who is your favourite composer?
My favourite composer?
Or do you have a favourite composer?
I used to. I think it changes. I think as you get older, your tastes change. Mm. When I was a student and 18, I was obsessed with Mahler. Obsessed completely. His orchestration, his huge orchestra forces. And I think as time develops, you maybe want to have something with clear lines. Maybe you go back to J.S. Bach. Maybe you want interested more in Mozart and Beethoven. It changes. I can't say, you know, what if I was to go on the desert island, what would I take?
I don't know. You tell us.
Yeah, I think it might be the Beethoven piano quintet.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Wind and piano. Very early work, but beautiful. I think that's what I would take. It's very difficult to know what would you take, you know. It's of all the choice of music, you know, it's such a lot of music, isn't it?
And is that why you are finding so much satisfaction in your wind ensemble?
Yes, I think so. It's
does it give you a bigger choice?
We have we play different
repertoire.
What about
your repertoire?
There's lots of different repertoire. We play arrangements from old music, from Renaissance music, right through to contemporary music. Pieces written by Albert Garcia, for example, mm-hmm. who's writing for us.
Oh, he's a very good composer.
Yes.
He wrote, very promising.
Yes, our famous
the
one,
the Fishmonger. Yes, yes,
we could now call it Talhut.
Talhut.
Because the fishmonger is like the person that wears a stripy apron. And it's not that. It's a street crier.
It's
you know, the one going around with the pram, with the lampuki. Lampuki hain! You know, it's that.
And you can hear
it?
The shouts.
Yes,
you
yes,
can hear
yes.
the cries of, this,
yes.
of the fish.
So I've been telling him, Albert, we're not going to call it the fisherman. We're going to call it Talhut.
Talhut. That's nice. That's a nice name. Now, what about your interest in popular music?
I have played in with Bean Growers, and I played also with Winter Moods, which I think we'll hear probably
we'll
towards
to that
the end.
Later,
towards the
because
end,
now it's time for us to hear
yeah.
you play with the your with your wind
with the
ensemble.
Cosmos. This was a concert that was played at live. They're all live recordings, by the way. These recordings I've given mm-hmm. you. This was at BMF2 last Easter, I think,
yes.
or April May. Yes,
last festival.
Yeah,
no?
last festival. Exactly, yes.
And
this
is
the piece. Is the Botza. Wind Quintet.
Okay, yes. Now we'll hear our guest for today's program, John McDonough, who will play with his friends. I'll call them your friends.
They are my
your
friends.
They
yes.
are your friends
They're
and colleagues.
My friends, yeah.
You sound as if you are. You have a very,
very good
friendly
friends.
Relationship
very, very
between
fond
you.
Of my people.
And you're going to play the Botza for us?
Yes.
From the Birmifter Festival.
That's right.
Held this year.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was you.
That was me and my ensemble.
And your yes. ensemble. We've already mentioned your interest in modern music.
Yes, I love jazz and I like pop music, of course, as most people do. I've had two opportunities to play with Maltese groups. One mm-hmm. was with Winter Moods, which was in 2003, and one song called Friends, which is a very beautiful song, which we'll play later. And the other one is with Bean Growers, with Alison Gallia, who's mm-hmm. now based in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And these were recorded at Temple Studios, which is David Vella mm-hmm. in Mistra. He's got a wonderful studio there. It's fantastic.
So shall we listen to Friends?
Yes,
now?
Let's listen to a bit of Friends. Yeah. Thank you, Joyce. I'm your friend too.
Yes, we are friends. We've been friends for a very long time. And this brings us to the end of our recording. Yeah. I mean, time has really run out.
Yes. Wonderful.
We could have talked about many more things, of course we have to give priority to your music. And now we're going to end with something very different, which is you playing with Winter Moods, Friends.
Thank you, Joyce.
Thank you.
My heart.